Good evening, TJ, and thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of the Mondays with Mogul Mom du Jour show. You know, TJ, when I reached out to you without hesitation, you wanted to be a part of this very important discussion. I would love it if you would just explain to my listening audience exactly why that was.
Hi, everybody, and Jacqueline, thank you so much for having me. It simply is because I'm probably one of the very few people that when you look at me, I'm now called the walking exclamation point, but when you look at me, you would never believe that I almost lost my life several times at the hand of my ex-husband. And I don't, you know, I don't walk it. I don't, you know, talk it for many years. No one knew. And, you know, I'm one of those, you know, successful women, high earners, that I just had this secret. And I think what God is using me for now is to really speak to those women who are like myself, successful in the public eye, but there is some darkness going on behind the closed doors, for sure.
Wow. Now, you said, you know, you were successful, you had the financial means, so needless to say, I have to ask the question because I'm certain there are women in particular who are sitting out listening and wondering, well, if you have the financial means, why didn't you leave?
Well, you have the mentality starts before it gets to the abuse. I mean, I graduated top of my class at Howard University. I am a successful now retired television editor. So, you know, I can count my clients as Disney, DreamWorks, ABC, NBC, MTV, VH1, some of the biggest shows in Hollywood. So I have a mindset that I don't fail. And I don't quit. So when this started happening in my own home, and, you know, I always tell people, while I'm holding it down in Hollywood, I'm being held down in my own home and no one knew, it's because there was a sense of failure. If I don't stay and figure this out, I'm smart enough. I call it I had educated my way into denial. I'm smart enough. I'm accomplished enough. I mean, people are booking me 2 and 3 months ahead to make sure I'm available to edit their show. I know I can figure out why I am not making my husband happy. I know I can figure out, you know, one day I walk in the house and I say, hi, honey, and I get yelled at because I should have said, hi, sweetheart. I mean, it really was little things like that. And so it was always these eggshells, but I was like, no, I'm smart. I'm intelligent. I can figure this out. I don't quit. And having a divorce on my record was like a sense of failure. So it's that mentality that just as a natural person, as natural as to who I am, that's what I brought into the marriage. I'm not a quitter. So abandoning this person, and then not to mention, I loved him. So for me, it's like you take marriage vows for better or for worse, and to me, that period was the for worse part, so I just needed to hang on until we got to the better. As his helpmate, if you will, I needed to be able to figure out how to help him be better. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm trying.
Yeah,
I can describe it. When you have women of my caliber who really are successful in their respective industries, and then not to mention, Jacqueline, I'm one of probably about seven black female reality TV editors. So there's a different mentality to even just survive in that environment. So we don't have a quitter attitude. We don't have a I'm giving up attitude. So then that also is how I looked at my marriage. This was just another challenge. This is just another thing that I need to continue to dissect and figure out a way around it. This was just, and not to mention the love. You know, I was holding on. Because here's the thing. Domestic violence doesn't start with you getting punched in the face. That's what's so scary about it. It starts with constructive criticism. It starts with you knowing that you married this person, so he wants the best for you. So whatever he's telling you is for your good. And then if you may be a year, and then it's systemic. It's just it's a systemic chipping away at your self-esteem because it's coming from a person who you think is supposed to love you and who wants you to be better.
True. Now, well, I'm just sitting here taking this all in because you're fighting a war in the career field, for lack of a better description, and then you're coming home and, in a sense, being the problem solver, or assuming I've got to resolve this problem because I'm the problem, I've got to help him, trying to just be all things to him, be all things at work, and probably on many occasions not feeling appreciated on either front.
Right.
So that had to.
And then for me, Jacqueline, we had lost our daughter.
Okay.
So because I process death and grief differently because I grew up in a funeral home family. My father was a mortician. I also took that responsibility that I need to help him grieve. Okay. I put aside my own grief even when he was accusing me of killing our daughter.
Wow.
You know, it was somehow because I was carrying her, it was my fault that I had a miscarriage. So
did
I took all of that
after?
And tried to – Say what? I started seeing the constructive criticism nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look back, I started seeing those signs a little earlier, but it wasn't until we lost her that it was like full-blown, everything that is wrong with my life is your fault.
Okay.
And it was just a matter of I'm thinking, I need to help him with his grief. He's grieving. Mind you, I'm the one that carried her. He wasn't even in the delivery room. I had to birth a stillborn.
Wow. I'm so
sorry. And so I'm processing my grief, putting my grief in an envelope, putting it in the drawer so I can handle his grief, and his grief is attacking me.
Mm. Wow. Now, how long did you endure this, TJ?
3 years.
3 years.
From the
time you lost your daughter.
To 2009 when he had me pinned up against the wall, and this wasn't the first time, and he was choking the life out of me. And this time, though, I saw in his eyes he had completely checked out and that he was not going to let me go in time. And at that moment, Jacqueline, I saw my mother's face. I saw my mom's face. I didn't even save myself for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was seeing my mother's face, and my mom and I are like road dogs. I mean, if you follow me on Facebook, you know I love me some mama.
Yeah,
so I could not let her find out I died like this.
Yeah.
And so I just started praying, Lord, if you save me this last time, I'm out of here, because you cannot let my mother find out that her baby had been through this, because she talked to me every day, so she would have been guilty of, shouldn't she have seen the signs? Shouldn't she have known something? I could not have her living with that guilt. You follow what I'm saying? I didn't even save myself. I saved myself for her.
For your mom.
That's how I had just gotten so low.
So these 3 years, no one, your family, your friends, no one knew you were enduring this?
No one knew I was enduring the physical. They had seen us argue and fight, and they knew something was off, Jacqueline. They just didn't know what. And the reason why they knew is because maybe about 2 or 3 weeks after I left, my inner light started coming back because I had removed myself. And so then it would be like, dang, T's, you're glowing. Then that's when they started to know how bad it had been. And it was very hard. You know, when I wrote my first book, 40 Days Till 40, I sent my family an advance copy because I needed them to hear it from me first before the public had it. And then I had to field the calls that were coming because nobody knew. I mean, I live in Los Angeles. My family is basically in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So I could fake it for the 20, 30 minutes that they were talking to me on the phone.
Yeah, but in person. Well, you know, I just want to backtrack a minute because we're speaking about a man who has pinned you against the wall. You're feeling the life being snuffed out of you. How did you get away?
As soon as I prayed that prayer, Lord, if you just spare me this one time, I'm out of here. He let me go. And that night, Jacqueline, I left.
Well,
I left. And the thing is, Jacqueline, I've been dragged, you know, and this may be too much information, but I really need the listeners to understand and so they can find themselves in my story. Here is a woman who's earning six figures being pulled off of the toilet as she's midstream by her hair. This is a woman, I have dreadlocks. This is a woman who's had her dreadlocks pulled out by her scalp, slammed down on hard concrete. I have a damaged disc in my back as a result of that incident. But no one knew.
No one knew. Suffering in silence. Well,
and then there's
I'm
the embarrassment.
Grateful.
There's
yeah.
really the embarrassment. I mean, you're in denial that this can't. It took me so long, Jacqueline, to come to terms with. It wasn't until I wrote the book that my editor was like, we're going to call this chapter domestic violence. I'm like, no, it wasn't domestic violence. It was abuse.
You were still in
and
denial.
And so she had to
point.
Pull back the layers.
Wow.
And because she read the story, she's like, Teach, that's all violence.
Yeah.
And it was just like, no, it was just like, what?
Down to the book, you were still making excuses for him.
Yes. Like, I'm a statistic.
Yeah.
Like, this happened to me. How did this happen? And then don't even get me started with the guilt when you do come to terms with, yes, I am a domestic violence survivor. Then it's the guilt of what happened to you, T? How did you let yourself stay in this environment for 3 years? So I have to even heal that.
Yeah, but you know what? It's one of those situations. Until someone walks a day in your shoes, they'll never understand, which is why it's so important. I know your schedule is jam-packed, and I appreciate you for taking the time to join me, but I really want to ask you, having gone through what you've gone through, what advice, T, would you give to someone who's enduring this now and maybe listening, or a potential domestic abuse individual victim who may not even see the signs right now, but should be. What advice would you have for them?
Well, I'm gonna speak to, you know, and people always think it's strange, and like you just said, unless you've walked in my shoes, you won't necessarily understand this statement. But I will never try to convince a person to leave, because here's what I know: until you get tired, you're going to keep rationalize what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and to the people who are listening who even suspect that their loved one is in it, when she gets tired and says, come get me, you make a move. Because going back to what I said earlier, it starts with constructive criticism. You are not crazy. Something is off. You can't put your finger on it. But something is off. And so I've actually developed what I called how to tell if you're sleeping next to crazy. And this is for the woman who's listening who might think, who kind of can see themselves in my story. Here's five questions to ask yourself. And crazy is an acronym. C, is he crafty with making the irrational seem rational, meaning you know what he just said is not right, but he has convinced you that maybe the sky really isn't blue. It may be yellow today, because he is so convincing and crafty with either yelling it or just the way he approaches it that it makes you pause and go, well, maybe, you know, it is it's green today. So that's the C. R, does he refuse to accept responsibility for his actions? I remember when my ex-husband said to me, Tawan, I hit you with my left fist. Imagine what would have happened if I hit you with my right. everything that he did wrong somehow tracked back to, well, Tawan, if you had just learned how to talk to your husband. Tawan, if you hadn't said hello like that, it wouldn't have set me off. There's no responsibility. He refuses to see his actions. A, does he assume the responsibility of sole decision maker? Jacqueline, I came home one day. I have a pool, and there used to be big trees all around my pool to make privacy. Girl, do you know I came home one day, and there were cranes in my backyard lifting out all my trees?
What?
He hadn't said a word to me. I just came home, and it was being done because I had no voice. I had no voice in the decision. Now, mind you, I'm the one who was making all the money.
Yeah. But you had given that up after you lost your daughter. It's like the tables were turned.
He assumed all responsibility of making all the decisions.
Hmm.
So that's the A. Z, does he zero in on your mistakes and your blunders? Girl, I was getting blamed for stuff I had done at 13 and 14 years old. I mean,
even know him then?
No! He would just zero in on every mistake I made, and in every argument, it would come up.
Mm.
So he never took responsibility. He refused to take responsibility for his actions, but yet he would zero in on mine. And then finally, the why. Does he yank at the stability of your mental, physical, and spiritual mind? Imagine you standing on a rug, and you're standing there, and your legs are kind of close together. Imagine someone just constantly grabbing at the rug. And so you're constantly trying to balance on the left leg or the right leg, the left leg or the right leg. That's what it's like. Just as soon as you think you have figured out how to deal with him, he changes the game. As soon as you actually correct the thing that he has told you is a problem and you need improvement on this area, he then changes the game. So you never can settle. Like, I could never, ever, ever. Like, in public, he was the most charismatic. You would think that he worshiped the ground I walk on because everybody and they knew how much he loved his wife. But I knew I couldn't count on that because the minute I sat in the car, I was going to be, well, why didn't you introduce me to this person? And why didn't you just say, honey? And why didn't you grab my hand? And why didn't you touch me on my shoulder? I was going to be every bee under the sun.
Wow.
So that is why I have crafted how to tell if you're sleeping next to crazy.
To crazy.
If you find yourself in any of that.
Well, why don't you please, I'd love for you to just once again share with the listening audience the name of your books, how they can reach you, how they can obtain these books, because I know
I'm gonna do you one better. I'm actually, for your listeners, if you go to www.pathtoresilience.com, because my next book is going to be called The Six-Figure Battered Wife, My Path to Resilience, I'm actually going to make the first chapter of my award-winning book, the first book that I wrote, I'm going to make that available to your listeners. And there is a PDF of the crazy formula. So they can go and download that for free and hide it in their wallet or whatever, you know, to hold on to. So that's where you can find all the information about me, www.pathtoresilience.com. The first chapter will be there for free, as well as the I Don't Fix Crazy, How to Tell If You're Sleeping Next to Crazy formula.
Wow. TJ, this conversation has been enlightening. I can't begin to tell you how much I thank you for being a part of my show tonight and contributing to this obviously extremely, extremely important discussion. And I applaud you for not only continuing to be an advocate for victims, but for also being a stellar example of a survivor.
Thank you. I like to say I'm a thriver now. I didn't just survive. I'm thriving.
You can't see
what I've been through. I'm a walking exclamation point.
Amazing. You are phenomenal, and I am so blessed to have you on my show this evening. I have words
cannot
express it. I thank you again, and listening audience, definitely I hope you all jot it down, the information for the website. Go there, download that information. This is a phenomenal woman that I am speaking with tonight, and she has shared some amazing nuggets. She shared so and revealed so much of herself authentically, and I thank you so much again, and we'll definitely be speaking soon. Thank you again, and have a wonderful, wonderful night.
Thank you.